Good morning. This is KBBI Homer AM 890. I'm Kathleen Gustafson, and you are tuned to the coffee table. October is Domestic Violence Awareness Month, so it's time for our check-in with Haven House Alaska. Ronnie Leach is here. Good morning, Ronnie.
Good morning, Kathleen. Thank you for having us.
Ronnie is the executive director of Haven House. And let's check the lines. Jane Dunn from the Kenai Peninsula Borough School District, are you there?
I'm here. Good morning.
Oh, good morning. And Kyle Darbone. Violence prevention.
Yeah, good morning, Kathleen.
You're the violence prevention coordinator at South Peninsula Haven House, correct?
That is correct.
All right. Well, we are all assembled. Also, we have some pre-recorded interviews to be played a little later in the show with Lindsay Collins, the CAC director, and Josh Collins from the Batterers Intervention Program. Also, we might get a call from Leslie Scroggins, the shelter manager.
That's correct.
And if you have any calls, anybody listening can call or comment over the hour by calling 235-7721. So thanks and good morning, everybody. I'd like to start with Ronnie Leach. Can you tell me a little bit about what kind of, are there projects for Domestic Violence Awareness Month? Are you just doing what you always do?
Well, we've had really great support with Grace Ridge. Sherry Stead is wonderful. She opened up her facility for us to have our first Friday. And there was an auction, and the community participated. There was an art auction, and there was the silent auction. And that went really well. And because of COVID, and we can't get out in the community, our prevention coordinators, Kyle and Jesse Felice and Marcy Gray, have been out in the community the best they can and working in the schools and really amping our social media to raise awareness.
And Women of Distinction should be having some kind of maybe an online event.
Well, it's recorded.
Oh, right.
So, yeah, and so it'll be presented on Facebook and through our website.
Awesome. I got the opportunity to speak to Daisy Kettle, the young woman of distinction, for a story. And then I plan to speak to Roberta Highland and Kyra Wagner, the woman of wisdom and woman of distinction for this year. So it's been wonderful talking to them. But I want to get to the subject, which is domestic violence in Homer. I don't think it's news to anyone that the numbers for the statistics for domestic violence in Alaska are astronomical.
No.
And so I would like to start with you, Ronnie, to talk a little bit about the shelter's role. And then Jane Dunn and Kyle Darbone, I'll be calling on you guys to talk a little bit about what you do. So stand by for that. But Ronnie Leach, executive director from Haven House, can you lay out a little bit of the services?
Yes, we have a legal advocacy. We have our emergency shelter. We have our 24-hour crisis line. We have our sexual assault response team. We have day services. We have our Homer Thrift, which actually works to assist women to get job skills after they've fled domestic violence so they can start to build a resume. We have Marcy Gray, who is out in the community and working with our transitional housing program. So individuals that are literally homeless due to domestic violence, our transitional housing program helps them get a fresh start.
Excellent. And Kyle Darbone, the violence prevention coordinator at South Peninsula Haven House. What does that mean, violence prevention coordinator?
Yeah, so when we think about domestic violence, we think about the act itself and the perpetrators and the victims. And so my job is to try to go before that ever becomes an act of violence and stop it before it starts. And I'm one of many prevention coordinators across the state and across the nation doing this work. And it starts a lot with educating our youth and educating the men and women in the area on how this happens in the first place and trying to break the cycles of violence and just truly educating and preventing the violence from ever beginning.
And Kyle, do you go into the schools and talk to people? Is there outreach for what you do, or is it all that people come to the shelter and then that's who you talk to?
It's a ton of outreach, especially in the schools. It's one of our favorite parts of the prevention program is getting to go into the schools, and we have a great relationship with the administrators around the district, and getting to go into schools like Voznesenka and the middle school and the high school and Flex and a bunch of other schools around the area, and get to run things like Green Dot trainings and getting into the younger schools and doing Girls on the Run and really empowering those young girls to just be able to recognize the signs of interpartner violence and just be able to see it before it starts and say, hey, we're not about that here in Homer and the Southern Kenai Peninsula.
Thanks, Kyle. Now, Jane Dunn, you are the at-risk student liaison to the Kenai Peninsula Borough School District. Have I got that right?
So I call myself the Students in Transition Liaison, also known as the Homeless Liaison. I'm the liaison for the Southern Peninsula, so I work with all the schools from the Nilchik South. And what I do is I work with families and students who are lacking permanent housing. So it could be all sorts of reasons why they're lacking permanent housing. They could be living in a camper, they might be living at the shelter, could be doubled up with another family, or could be youth who are not living with their guardian. And my goal is to try to make school easier by reducing a lot of the stresses and limitations that they might be experiencing surrounding school. So whether it's getting food, clothing, hygiene supplies, help with transportation to school, all sorts of things like that. I help get those things for them and try to connect them with local resources.
So a lot of kids aren't attending school physically right now, Jane. I'm wondering, how do you stay in contact with the students in transition that you're there to serve?
You know, that's been an interesting one, and it's an experiment like everybody else is doing. So it's a mix of phone, email, Zoom meetings, Skype, pretty much any way that I can. I have been emailing students more than I normally do this year. Usually when I connect with parents, I'm connecting with them over the phone, and I do have a dedicated line. I'm working remotely myself, but I have a dedicated phone that is just for contacting my students and families, and I can text with them on that number too, so that makes it a lot easier for a lot of people.
So I want to open up the conversation to start with Ronnie, but I want to hear Jane and Kyle, if you have anything to add. I definitely want to ask for your input. Ronnie, you talked about in our pre-interview a little bit, you talked about the difference right now with Haven House dealing with COVID.
Right. And because we work with our funders closely, we, follow the guidelines that they've put together, which are based on CDC guidelines. And to keep our shelter safe, we operate right now at 50% capacity. So what we've coordinated in the community is safe places for new victims and their children to stay until they've isolated and they've passed, they've gotten a negative COVID test, and then we can bring them in.
So
as long as we have room.
You're isolating or quarantining people
right
before they come into the shelter.
To keep everyone safe, to make sure that they're safe, to keep our current shelter residents safe, and as long as we have space, because we're a 20-bed shelter.
And so now you're a 10-bed
shelter. We're a 10-bed shelter. So if we have room where we can bring them in, then we make that transition. If not, then we make accommodations for them, and then we have advocates that do outreach with them every day. So they're still connected, but in just a different way.
And you have advocates that go to court. What are the protocols like in court right now?
The courts have been closed down, and we haven't had any advocates called to courts or residents, so everything's just been done online.
Okay, and masks in the shelter?
Yes, and sanitizing, and we've been able to have an extra advocate on staff to really keep up with the cleaning.
And so before I open this question up, I realize we haven't really talked about where the shelter is yet and how to contact. So can you start with that? Well, first of all, you have a terrific website.
Right, we do. It's havenhousealaska.org, and then we're also on Facebook.
And I'll never forget the shelter's main number, because it is one number transposed from KBBI's. We get calls for the shelter. I figure you guys probably get people leaving bush lines. So that's 235-7712.
That's our main line. So, that's our main line. And our shelter is 235-8943. And it's staffed 24/7.
Okay. And Jane, what kind of, are you making house visits at all?
You know, sometimes I need to deliver things to people, and I basically, this is where the texting comes in handy, is that I can drop things off outside their door or at the school and just text when those things are there and ready to be picked up.
And Kyle, my question is, are Green Dot trainings, can they be held on Zoom? Can they be held virtually?
Oh, they can be held virtually, Kathleen, and they're happening every Wednesday. So from 5 to 6, they are being run by our incredible Green Dot coordinator, Jesse Felice. And you can get that information either from our Facebook or from me directly at kyle@havenhousealaska.org. And something great about this Domestic Violence Awareness Month is that we partnered with some local businesses around. And if you attend a Green Dot training during the month of October, you can get discounts to some local businesses like Udalali and Sawn Cycle, Ulmer's, Grace Ridge. So it's just great getting to connect local businesses and folks who are just wanting to get out, learn some things, and make a positive difference in Homer.
Let me just repeat that for people. So there are incentives to local businesses for completing the Green Dot training, or completing a chapter of Green Dot training. Is that right?
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah, and they if you've already taken a Green Dot training, we can kind of change it around to be more about coming up with situations and, like, what would you do in this situation? If you're brand new to Green Dot, we can tailor it to that and give you an overview of Green Dot with all of the little skills and tools that you need to feel comfortable being a bystander.
Well,
intervening.
I have you scheduled for on this hour for a bit an overview of bystander intervention and explaining Green Dot. So everybody stand by for that. The next thing I'd like to do is introduce one of our pre-recorded interviews. Ronnie, can you briefly introduce Lindsay Collins, the CAC director? That's the Children's Advocacy Center, right?
That's correct. And Lindsay has been with Haven House for 3 years. She's amazing. She's our CAC director from the Kenai Peninsula. We have an office in Kenai that she's also provides oversight, and she's amazing.
Okay. Well, then, with that introduction, here is Lindsay Collins, the Children's Advocacy Center. So the Children's Advocacy Center exists in Homer physically, in Kenai
physically.
And, well, she'll tell you all about it, but you serve the whole area.
Yes.
So here's Lindsay Collins. Lindsay Collins.
South Peninsula Haven House is, you know, an umbrella organization that has many programs. And the Kenai Peninsula Children's Advocacy Centers, or CACs, is one of those programs. And we run that program for the whole Kenai Peninsula. So we actually have a center here in Homer at Haven House, and then also in Kenai, a physical location. But we serve kiddos from Seward to the head of the bay and across the bay.
What age range are we talking about?
17 and under. Adults 18 and over, if they were victims and there was a need for them to be interviewed in that kind of environment. But 0 to 17.
And it's a pretty comfy room with an easel and drawing materials. So what happens when a child 0 to 17 has to come into that room and sit down and meet you?
Mm-hmm. So if they're really 3 or under, we would let them play in there and kind of have free play and see what their levels were for talking about what maybe happened to them. So we may not interview those, but they would receive a forensic exam by a forensic nurse. Children talking age would come into the room. It's a child-friendly environment. And they talk with myself or a couple other people who are trained forensic interviewers. The Alaska district attorneys accept as acceptable protocol for interviewing children when there have been allegations that a crime has happened to them. So that could be sexual abuse or it could be severe physical abuse or neglect.
After you've made an assessment, what are the steps that you take as the CAC person?
The Children's Advocacy Center model takes a child and family when something bad has happened. We're with them through the life of a case. A disclosure is made to maybe a parent or a teacher or someone. They come in, they're referred by either through the Office of Children's Services or law enforcement. They come in, they get an interview. Then after that interview, OCS or law enforcement decides what they're going to do next. As a CAC, we have family advocates that stay with that family and child. That could mean a number of things. That we help them with referrals for medical or mental health, but we also walk them through if and when there is a legal process. That means prepping them for court, kind of being their advocate with the district attorney's office to help explain what's happening legally. We can get them victim assistance. Maybe it happened in their home, and so that child no longer feels safe in their bedroom because that's where it happened. There's actually victim assistance to help repaint the room, get new sheets, get new furniture so that they're in a new space, things like that.
How often do you or do advocates go to court? What I'm getting at here is the incredibly low rate of convictions for people who commit these crimes.
So that's a really great question, and it's one that we get a lot and a lot of people wonder about, as they know that we live in a state that has really high rates.
Not just
the
really
highest.
High, yeah. But in fact, if we were to cut our domestic violence statistics by half, we would still have the highest domestic violence statistics in the country.
Yeah, unfortunately, the rates of domestic violence and child abuse are very high all around our state. What I can say to what you were asking about, just convictions. So what happens is the burden of proof is so high when a crime has been committed against a child that although the rate of acceptance, the DA, may be lower than we would like to see it, the rate of convictions from the accepted cases by the DA is high.
So it takes a lot for them to accept a case, but once they do accept one, the likelihood goes up.
Right. The number is still low. When a case gets accepted, the DA knows they have something.
There's still work for you to do that doesn't involve convictions.
Absolutely.
Because you have a relationship with the family.
Yep. We're helping them through this thing or maybe multiple things that just happened in their life. And studies show that for children who have been sexually abused, as long as they have caregivers or adults in their life that believe them and affirm, they can go on. So the key that we're working with caregivers are, the non-offending caregivers, is that you believe your child, you're with your child through this whole process.
Almost always, the worst thing you can do is look the other way.
Right, exactly.
And pretend it's not happening.
Yep, whether it's in a child, whether it's an adult, whoever it's, yeah, even for adults, we need other adults that believe us and that are there for us when we have hard times.
We've been talking about sexual abuse and to some extent domestic violence as well, right?
Mm-hmm.
We are going to address child trafficking during the show. And there are some things that I want to make clear to people because I do not want to participate in platforming the idea that there are powerful figures in the shadows who are far, far from us that we cannot affect. We don't have the luxury of entertaining that nonsense here. We have real problems.
Right, right. On the ground in our own community.
One of the things that I wanted to get an expert to make clear is that any kid who trades sex for a meal or a place to sleep is being trafficked.
Yes, that's absolutely right.
Even if they're perfectly happy with that situation.
Yes, that is absolutely right.
And how often would you say that is what you encounter in terms of children classified as trafficked?
I don't want to give a number or a percent to it. But we do have, especially teens, that are being trafficked in our town. Whether, like you said, you gave the example, for food, for a safe, dry place to stay, for drugs, for alcohol.
Say, for instance, mom's boyfriend works on the slope, and when he's home, the kid can't stay there. It's not safe.
That's absolutely
and
right.
And so then they're off to go find some place to live while their home situation is unsafe.
Yep, they might be being trafficked, whether or not they would tell us they're okay with it or not.
Or consider that person their girlfriend or boyfriend.
Exactly, yep, a child. So in Alaska, a 14-year-old can't give consent. Let's just say that. Even if they come to us and say, no, it was consensual. Unfortunately, while we do everything we can to make sure that 14-year-old still maintains their own choice over their body and things like that, we do consider that a crime. Say we do have a 16-year-old that was at a party and was raped, and they tell someone and they come to us, whether they know who the person was or not, the qualification for them coming to us is not that they know who it was. We can have unknown perpetrators sometimes. They may have been doing drugs or alcohol at that party, and the police, you know, are there. It's their case. What we always tell them, we have law enforcement support on this. What we always tell that 16-year-old is that we understand. We understand that you were at a party and it sounds like that you were drinking, or when we brought you in for the exam the night before, you were inebriated. There was a crime that happened to you. And so we want to know about that. Do not worry about getting in trouble if you were drunk or taking drugs that night. We want to keep you safe and make sure that this doesn't happen to you again. Make sure that you're okay, you know, physically.
So much of your work is rightly couched in confidentiality. Mm-hmm. So this would usually be the point in an interview where I say, how can people contact you? And how right. can they volunteer? And how can they get involved? And I'd like to know how the community, individuals in this community, can support the work you do.
I always say it, and I feel like I sound like I'm at the air, you know, what you hear at the airport. But if you see something, say something. Whether that means reporting, you know, we have great mandatory reporting laws here in Alaska that completely indemnify people of getting into any trouble as long as they're reporting in good faith. But also, if you see something and it is a child or a teen that you have a relationship with, talk to them. Ask them, you know.
Oh, and more importantly, listen to what they say.
Listen to them. Be that safe adult for a child or teen. Bystander training, because you might be in a situation where you can actually, and teens can take it too. You know, even they even have a version of it now in the middle school.
How does the fact that people aren't out, how is this affecting your work?
Yeah, so I will say, you know, at the beginning, this spring, things were pretty quiet. But as we went into the summer, our numbers stayed very similar to previous years throughout the peninsula. Really, reports overall, if you look from year to year, haven't gone down. Just because numbers are similar to last year doesn't mean, oh, we're getting everything. We still know that the child abuse and domestic violence that we do hear about is underreported.
Yep. Yeah, even with the numbers as high as they are, yep. We know they're underreported.
Yep.
So I'm going to say thank you, Lindsay
thank
Collins.
You.
And that's Lindsay Collins, the child services, no.
Child Advocacy Center Advocacy. Director.
Child Advocacy Center Director for Haven House. And she stopped by yesterday. I want to pick up the thread because I want to continue this conversation about what it means to be trafficked in Homer. And so I'm going to call on you in a minute, Jane Dunn, from Kenai Peninsula Borough School District. But Ronnie, I was hoping you could shed some light on the problem. Is it something you deal with every day? Is it an ongoing issue for trafficking in Homer?
We do see trafficking in adult victims that come into the shelter, and they are trading sex for places to live. It's no different than the teens or the younger kids. But we have women who are trading sex for drugs, a place to live, food, and it's not an uncommon thing. We don't see it. No, you know, it's like we don't see domestic violence. We don't see sex trafficking. Unless the adult victim comes in and reports to us.
That was my other question is, your experience in Homer is not with people being like brought in from outside. These are our neighbors.
These are our neighbors. They're somebody you would see at the laundromat or the grocery store.
And Jane Dunn from the school district, can you talk about like what kind of training do you have to go through to address this problem?
Actually, it's funny. Just last week, I was doing a training. The National Association for the Education of Homeless Youth had a conference online, and there's a big portion of it that's all about human trafficking and child trafficking. And you know, what Lindsay and Ronnie are saying is spot on, of course. Of course, they would know. But it's absolutely true. With young people, someone under the age of 18, there, it doesn't have to involve force, fraud, or coercion like it does with adults. I've taken a few trainings in human trafficking to be able to identify these things. And I don't require anybody I talk to about getting services to tell me all of what they've gone through. If they want to share their story, they can, but I just need to know what kind of living situation that they're in currently. So that way, if I can help meet their basic needs by getting them food stamps or clothes, all the things that a trafficker would use as a manipulation tool, then that really can help minimize the risk.
Well, in early September, Lieutenant Gamache, who is the head of police and fire at the airport in Anchorage, was here. He has started an organization called Alaska Aware to raise awareness on trafficking. And one of the things that he mentioned in his talk in Homer was that especially for young people, but for everyone, one of the major indicators that a person is at risk to being trafficked is homelessness. Mm-hmm. And so, I don't want to know how many homeless kids there are, but I would like to know something about, because I don't expect you'd really feel comfortable telling me that. But does the number change constantly? I mean, does it happen? Like, can you give me an overview of what the problem is in Homer for students in the school district, Jane?
In terms of homelessness in general?
Yes.
Yeah, so, you know, like I said before, I work with both families that are lacking permanent housing and with unaccompanied youth. That's youth who are not living with their legal guardians. And also, as I mentioned, I don't require them to tell me their whole stories. But, you know, a lot of our young people who are couch surfing, for some reason, they might feel that things aren't safe for them to be at home. They might realize it's a better that they're going to be able to be more successful in school if they're living with a friend or a cousin or something. There's all sorts of different reasons. It could be that the parents are having some economic stress and, you know, it's easier for the kid to stay with somebody else for a period of time.
Well, I feel like that question kind of needs to go to you first, because I do want to hear from Ronnie about it, but Haven House is not a homeless shelter. So people experience homelessness in relation to their experience of domestic violence mm-hmm. often or often enough. So, but how do you address the homelessness end of things, Ronnie Leach?
We have our homeless assistance program, and that program supports individuals that are impacted by homelessness or at risk for homelessness. So through that program, we can get them hotel rooms for, you know, it's time limited, or we can give them the funds to get into a place.
Okay, so temporary housing like hotels.
Right.
Also help with getting a deposit together.
Permanent housing placement.
Honestly, that's often the biggest hurdle.
It is.
Is getting the deposits in line.
First and last month's rent is huge.
Do you also do things like act as a reference for housing?
No, we can't do that.
Okay.
But we also then, you know, connect them with our Homer Thrift, and Liz coordinates with the families to get furnishings and things to set up their homes.